Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I'm here with my long-suffering co-host, Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork. I am GMB Kamichuk, known to my friends as Gregory. And we've brought two... Look, they're so nervous, Justin. We've brought two long-time returning guests of the show on a very special day today. Today is Kickstarter launch day of The Laundryman. And I will promise you, dear listener, this is not just a constant push to have you back their Kickstarter The Laundryman. This is a way for us to talk about how genre gets made. One of the ways you make stuff is you control it yourself, and The Laundryman is a creator-owned project by Stephen Call and Lennon Rutchanka, and thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be back.
Yeah, really excited. I'm here, it feels like, all the time, so I'm going to let Stephen do a lot of the talking today, because I feel like he gets not enough time to do that, and I'm going to chime in whenever I think it's constructive.
And occasionally we're going to cue Stephen with the great weatherman voice, which he was warming up before we started. Isn't
which
that right,
voice? Stephen? This voice?
That's the voice.
This voice, the weatherman voice.
Full disclosure, Lennon Rutchanka is in the studio now on a, probably to him, too often basis, doing a whole bunch of logistics and management things at the studio, as well as working on his own comics and creative endeavors. So, Stephen, you're the voice we don't hear a lot.
You're right. I'm here a medium amount of time, medium to low amount of time.
And so what I want to know from you, first off, is what don't you like about Lyndon? And what are some things you can't wait to disclose to us publicly on air, finally in a safe place?
I don't know how to say this. I only ever think this. I never actually say this.
Insufferable.
I don't like when he tells me what to say. No, Lynn is the best. Yeah.
You must like each other because you have done that very important and terrible thing where you decide in order to tell a story, you have to work together to tell it. Right, comics is a very, all joking aside, comics is a very special medium in that the writer and the illustrator together create that third form, which is the comics page.
Yeah, like I think about this all the time. Like our books wouldn't get done without what I would call the absolute equal effort that we're both putting in. Like I'm putting in all these hours drawing, but like this Kickstarter wouldn't have launched today if Lyndon didn't put an equal amount of hours into everything else, including not just his script writing but his lettering, but like logistics and figuring stuff out and management. it's awesome. Yeah.
And I think it is true in comics that this often falls in the writer's purview to take over that management role, and that is what they're sort of asking for. But I will say that it's not common that all writers have the capacity to build up a media list, manage things properly, do things on time, get stuff to the finish line in a professional way. So, Lyndon, how do you feel? It's launch has already happened. So what I want you to do is tell me, what are the things you forgot?
What did I forget?
Yeah, now that it's launched and you can't take it back, people don't know what you planned. Usually when something launches or when you're doing a public event, they don't know what you planned, only what happened. So people online only know what's happening. But there must be some things, and I think it's good for a listener who's like, oh, I want to start a Kickstarter. I'm so worried something's going to slip through the cracks. I think it'd be great to put you on the spot and address some of those things of like, oh, I wish I'd done this better.
Jay, I think we should focus on here. I think a lot of our listeners are probably people who make things and don't necessarily know how to get them out there and are thinking about maybe doing a Kickstarter and not knowing how to get started or how to launch it and how all that looks. So let's get like really specific and talk about the whole process from making the comic to making the Kickstarter and everything in between.
Yeah, and as granular as you want to make it, we can go.
the thinking about it, the biggest thing that I wish that I had done differently was I started reaching out to podcasts, aside from you guys, to be on, to promote the book and the Kickstarter roughly 6 weeks, 5.5 weeks prior to the launch of the Kickstarter. That was too late. Wow. I should have started reaching out 10 weeks. There were a couple of shows that I would have loved to be on that told me when I contacted them at the end of December that they were already full for all of February and that we could get in touch sometime later if we wanted to do a show. But because our window for this campaign was the month of February, not necessarily as much of a priority as making sure that that episode that we're on comes out during the campaign.
And what did that email look like? How did you approach these? First of all, which podcast did you target? And then what was the email? What did it look like to make this podcast actually want to talk to you?
Yeah. Okay. So this is actually a great story. Friend of the podcast, George McHale, runs Inside Comics, which is a YouTube series where he talks granular details of making comics. And I reached out to him because I knew he does Inside Comics and asked him if Steven and I, if he would be interested in having Steven and I come on and talk about the process of making The Laundryman.
And for the dear listener, George has also had a number of creative Kickstarters that he's launched both himself and also through other publishers. So you can check out Resilient, you can check out Cover of Darkness, you can check out Hybrid Force for those.
Yeah. And so the secret to how this ended up happening, the rest of these shows ended up happening, is when George responded to me, he told me yes, but I would have done this whether he said yes or he said no. I said, great, but also, do you know of any other comics podcasts that might be interested in having guests on to talk about their books?
Little did you know you'd asked exactly the right question to exactly the right guy.
Exactly, yeah. So he sent me a list of 9 shows, I think, that to contact. And I sent each of them an email that essentially boiled down to, hi, I'm so-and-so. I am in the midst of making this book with artist Stephen Call. Our Kickstarter is launching on February 3rd. We would love to come on to your show. George McHale of Inside Comics recommended that we get in touch with you. Do you have any availability to speak to us? And of those 9, maybe half responded. But anytime anyone did respond, I responded back to them saying thank you or like thanks for responding. Do you know of anyone who might be looking for guests on their show? Mm-hmm. And every time I got a response, I asked for more. They're called referrals. Mm-hmm. I asked for referrals. And that ended up giving us a list of 22 comics podcasts to reach out to. And we got on to 8 of them, roughly. I don't know what the exact number is, but so if I could go back or if I was going to do this again, I would probably start reaching out almost a month earlier so that we could get on to more shows.
Wild Stallion!
Okay, I have a question for you, Steven, because I think a writer has the ability to answer a repeated question over and over. They have a different set of repeated questions that they can give different answers to, right? What I'm referring to is the media cycle of, like, if you're promoting something, people tend to ask the same kinds of questions. There's more variation, I think, when they are thinking about talking to the writer, because so many people believe they understand what writing is. So they have a lot, they're more conversant in coming up with the questions. But if they themselves are not artists, the questions tend to be the same 3 or 5 questions. And you're grinning. So I'd love for you to tell me some of the questions you've been answering regularly.
Yeah, how far are you guys into this?
You guys are our second or third last.
Okay, so you're near the end of this.
Yeah, you're like 6, 7, or 8 or something like that.
What's an answer you've had to give a lot?
Well, one answer that I had to give a lot, but I think this is one we both have to give a lot, because this is our first time on a lot of these shows. It's how did you get into comics? Who are your influences? And this is stuff we've probably covered on this show like years ago, right?
For sure. Yeah.
But one that I really like answering is, how do you go about like creating your characters? And it seems like a really like general question, but it allows me to like kind of go into my process and like almost like it's almost like I'm giving advice to other artists out there, because it's I just really like answering that question, because I get to tell people like, don't sweat all the small stuff, like just put the throttle down and just keep going with designing your characters. I can go into details if you want, but
you know. Well, since it's the question you like answering, mm-hmm. maybe why don't you take a minute and tell us how this collaboration works as far as allowing you to have that visual voice of character creation and set design and pacing and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, once Lyndon makes that script, like, it's me off to the races, so I get to just create. And like, when it comes to characters, I'm a big movie guy. I love watching movies. The first thing I think of every time I like go to do a character is like, who would play this person in a movie? Or is there an actor in my head that I've been like, oh, it'd be so cool to do something that person would be the main character of. And then I'll design the character around that. And it's usually it starts with their face. And then as I make so many mistakes in trying to recreate likeness on like a rapid rate, it turns into my character's face after a little while. But a huge thing that I enjoy about doing comic illustration, especially from a tight script like what Lyndon puts forth, is taking the emotion of the line that Lyndon creates and having the character exhibit that not only through their position in space, but through every movement, because every part of your body is emoting when you're saying something. So like, even right now my hands are doing something, and like, so the problem solving of considering what a person would be doing while they're saying or doing a certain thing, or where they are in it is just super important. Like, there's a scene right at the end, and I'm not going to spoil anything, and if you've read any bit of The Laundry Man, you'll know this doesn't spoil anything, with the scene in the end where they're both smoking cigarettes. It's kind of dark and they're kind of in the car, kind of, it can't be kind of, they are in the car. and just the way I was able to kind of like convey their feeling just through the way each one is taking a drag on their cigarette. I'm very proud of like that kind of thing.
So the nuance of that.
The acting, yeah.
Okay, so Kickstarter comics, you guys finished this book before going to Kickstarter, which is not always the case. I don't know what the breakdown is between finished and unfinished book projects on Kickstarter, but I would tend to say most books are not finished. Why did you guys finish this book Kickstarted it?
Let's not assume that all dear listeners understand what crowdfunding is.
Right,
so
right,
much
right.
of crowdfunding is the notion that you have an idea, and if you only had enough money, then you could afford to set aside time to finish the idea. If you will pre-purchase or pre-order whatever our widget is, our idea, our object, then we'll have enough money to set time aside to finish it. But some people finish the project first, and then use it as a pre-order mechanism.
Which a lot of bigger companies are doing more.
It's already
more well.
Done. If you want one, you can be the one that has it with a certain set of incentives. So just to frame it for the person who doesn't know, and just to restate Justin's question, right? You guys finished first. Why?
I'll give a little bit, then I'll hand it over to Lyndon because I think he's got a lot to say on this too. The first why would be, I think it's probably always better. I don't know for sure. I don't have a lot of experience with Kickstarter, but I think it's probably always better for the reader, the Kickstarter themselves, to see that once they pledge for that book, as soon as that campaign is over, they know that book is going to be printed. And then they're going to get their book. So like recently I backed a Kickstarter. Not recently, I backed a Kickstarter 2 years ago. And I only just got the books now. Granted, it had not been done. They were looking for funding to create the book. And I picked the one that would ship the latest, where I wanted all volumes of the book. So, right. Which makes sense. But it's 2 years later and you forget about it. And I like the idea of at least getting it faster. And then another big thing, as to how we finished it first was, well, we're in Canada where you have multiple tiers of government grants for the creative arts. So we have an inside track luck in Canada here that we're able to secure funding to create these books well ahead of time, so that when we do go to Kickstarter, we do go to some sort of crowdfunding, we don't have to ask for wages per se. We can just ask for people to help us print it.
Right. You've already received support for the wage piece, so you're not asking for that. You're being transparent to say, like, someone paid us to make it already. Yeah. If you want us to send you one, we need money to print it now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. In short, this book exists because of the generous support of the Winnipeg Arts Council and the Manitoba Arts Council. So we were fortunate enough to be paid a page rate to do the work. And we got to do it.
I can hear somebody right now saying, "But that's not fair."
I was just going to say, let's not make it sound like you guys were just handed money. You had to write a proposal, a grant proposal, which is not easy to do. There's a ton of work. You have to make a government body believe in your comic book project.
And I made that sound easy. Keep going.
You have to make a bunch of suits. Imagine the end product is going to be something worthwhile that's going to benefit the province, city, or country.
That's just to be approved to then have your grant go to a jury of peers. So first it has to be like cogent enough and understandable enough and tick a certain number of boxes where the government says, if we give you this money, we believe that it will actually, and this is part of their calculation, stimulate future economic growth within the scope of the Canadian blank industry. That's part of their thing. And the other thing is, will this stabilize a working artist? Because a working artist can produce more work, which then has a direct economic benefit to the home country. Right?
So,
you have to do that first.
Yeah. Yeah, but that doesn't change the fact that the short answer is, we did it first because we were paid.
Right.
That's just the fact of the matter. Outside of that, the question was the benefits of doing it prior to the Kickstarter are what Stephen outlined. It's nice to have it finished already. It's nice to not have to be working on it while dealing with the Kickstarter.
You can plan way, way better.
You have materials to pump into your Kickstarter. Having a Kickstarter full of gorgeous pages and the cover, and like people get a real sense of what the book looks like just scrolling through the Kickstarter, because you have so much to pick from.
We've learned that the world has a great history.
Yes.
And that, thanks to great leaders such as Genghis Khan, Joan of Arc, and Socratic Method, the world is full of history.
So we did recently the She-Wolf Kickstarter, and we had half of the comic finished because we had done it as a short and wanted to stretch it out as a full. And trying to choose what art to hold back, as this will be your reward, is you can see it all. When you have it finished, I feel like my initial urging was, just show everything, right? It's done. Let's prove that it's done. But of course, if you show everything, why would they back it? They have it all already.
Well, in a way, we did that because for The Laundryman, we took the first issue of the book, which is 22 pages, and we've already printed that into a single floppy that we printed in black and white in early 2022. And we took that to shows and we sold it for $5 a book, but we printed 100 copies of it and we sold out of it. And that's sort of what spurred us to say, oh, we really need to get the full book out in the world now because people like it and we like it. But when we went to choose...
Let's not jump over something. You printed 100 copies of a black and white version of a comic that is in color. And you took it to shows at a super reasonable price point. Anyone who knows anything about printing at 500 or at 100 copies, $5, you're not doing that for some fiduciary windfall. But you wanted, like, what's the motivation?
Was that always the plan? We're going to test out 100 copies, and then if those sell, do something else with it?
No, I mean, the fact of the matter was that we were working on issues 2 and 3, but we had issue 1 sitting. It wasn't doing anything. So one of the things that Stephen and I wanted to focus on when the event started to wind down and we started to go back to shows was we really wanted to grow the books, the amount of stuff that we had on tables that we could show people and that we could offer. And we had a complete comic issue that had a beginning and a admittedly cliffhanger ending finished and just sitting on a hard drive. And so when we discovered the short run printer Mixum that we use now to print comics, it seemed like sort of a no-brainer that we could print off a limited run of these books and offer them up. So even though we were working on the full volume, it also served as a really good proof of concept, as it were.
Which is a really low cost, like almost crowdfunded marketing, right? The money you're asking for, if someone's interested, they can have it. You don't make anything from it. But the book is also not the complete experience. So if they liked it, they might come back for the color one. And do you think this helps build your list then for future crowdfunding?
I think so, yeah. Because not going to lie, Laundryman being the story that it is, it's an easy, quick, like hit you right in the face pitch. Like when people hear like the way...
We'll hit it with, give us.
Well, it's a story about two mercenary monster hunters who work out of their laundromat, traveling all across the land, solving supernatural mysteries and supernatural and horror mysteries. And then people go like, what? And then you say like, well, it's like a monster of the week. Think of it like X-Files meets Ghostbusters meets Supernatural with a heavy dose of black suits and cigarettes. And people go like, oh my gosh. And then it's a really affordable book. And then if we're talking on the sales side, it's like, then people look at your other books and you're able to really show them the breadth of what you can put out. He's got one.
And the thing that we wanted to add was we printed it in black and white. One, because Stephen could make it look good, but two, because it literally halves the printing costs. I think our unit cost for those books was just under $3. And if we were to print it in color, it would have been $5. So we would have had to sell it at a loss if we were going to sell it for $5. Right. We wanted to have an item that was really accessible, that we could sell for cheap.
Yeah. And this is, for people listening, the idea of going small on printing like this is really important to be nimble at this stage of your career, of wanting to not have all your financial means tied up in a single idea when you guys have a lot of stuff going on, right? So when we haven't listed all of it, but there's a number of things that you have in print that you're coming up that are going to be in print. And so this gives you an idea to test a very friendly market. If you're going to shows, you get people who are self-selecting to that they are comic fans. They've come to a comic show. They're looking for things they haven't heard of before. They want to be pitched to, and having been pitched to, they buy your book. And so you're already on the right side of the gate. So if you're thinking of it as, if the business hats are listening, customer acquisition, you guys put all that time and labor and energy and cost, which you could associate a dollar value to the cost of acquiring a new customer, right? And for a lot of people on online campaigns, $12, $13, $30, $60 are acceptable price points to acquire a new customer, right? So if you're looking at it in those terms, right, you're way ahead of that game.
That's a good point. Yeah, I actually never thought of it from that perspective. I guess maybe like in a simpler way, thought of it as like it's with a $5 book, it's much more in what people are thinking they're going to spend on a floppy comic. So it's people are more relaxed to talk about it with you and possibly pick it up. And it's kind of a, if people don't want to talk to you, it's an easy way for them to get away from the table is picking up a $5
book. $5 at you, like a puff of smoke and run.
It's a pity bill. It's a pity $5 bill.
Oh, these poor guys. Let's give... Honey. Yeah, that's right. Just pull $5 out of your wallet.
I'm pretty sure there was a few of those. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Do you remember the one guy in Toronto? We were like, hey, do you want to talk about comics? And he stared at us. He's like, let's make it quick.
Yeah, and he bought two. Yeah.
So you guys are doing podcasts. How else are you getting word out about the Kickstarter? Like, well, on the tail of this, getting customers, right? You've been at shows, so you've had some boots on the ground advertising for this. Were you talking about the Kickstarter at the last shows? Okay. So you were letting people know that this is going to be a Kickstarter. Now you're doing a whole bunch of podcasts. What other ways are you getting word out about the Kickstarter?
I mean, Instagram, Twitter, just trying to lay on in social media, just trying to like keep the message alive for the whole month. And as long as we keep the stories rolling and stuff, people will see it and it might convert, right? And then we also have our newsletter that we're running. So we've got on our website, infinitestudio.ca. If you go in there, you can sign up for our newsletter, which is a twice a month. You get a letter from Lyndon. You get a letter from me.
It's a little bit more often right now.
Right. And it's a little more rapid fire for the Kickstarter. So we are going to be using that to speak to the people who have already invested themselves in our work and respectfully, you know, tell them about what's going on with us right now. And for anybody who wants to get onto that newsletter or just hear from us throughout the month about this, you actually receive a free 20-page comic when you sign up. So that's our comic, When I Get Home, the one that we finished inside of 24 hours, which you two gentlemen probably remember or don't remember.
It's foggy.
Yeah.
It happened to somebody else.
Yeah. But I was there.
Yeah, we were there. We were there. Yeah.
We were all there together.
That's why we made the comic, so we could remember that we were there. Yeah.
That's true.
But yeah, so you get the digital version of that for free when you sign up for the newsletter. So that's a big thing that, I mean, at least for the last month, has been pretty good as far as like getting people interested in looking in. So
right, and so now like the Kickstarter launched today, but like leading up to it, you were talking about getting onto podcasts, Lyndon. But besides that, what did that kind of lead up schedule look like? Because I think that's an important thing to talk about that a lot of people don't put any effort into until the Kickstarter launches and then they advertise. But it's important to do stuff before.
Yeah. So when we were doing shows through 2022, we were talking about the Kickstarter coming. Anyone who bought Laundryman, the black and white issue, we would tell them we're doing this Kickstarter and we're going to be doing it in the spring. You can either sign up for our newsletter, which we had active, but we weren't really using, or you can come find us at a show next year and we'll have the book for you. But we started experimenting with trying to build a mailing list at the beginning of last year when we started going to shows.
Which is really important. I don't like it, but it works so well.
Yeah, I detest it, but it does work.
Yeah, so we don't have a secret, dear listener, for building a successful mailing list. We started by just making it updates, like and being very clear that we weren't going to spam someone's inbox with stuff. But back in December, which is when I started contacting podcasts and stuff, I restructured the newsletter so that anyone who signed up got something out of it, and you'd get a free comic out of it. And it's sort of a bonus that we have this sort of fun time story for other people about how we made the comic. And then we can tell them, you know, we can give it away because it only took us a day to make.
Oh, behold, he ate the pig, thus proving that he's a
Ziggy Piggy, Ziggy Piggy, Ziggy Piggy.
Can we get into the dark side here? Because we're all artists, right? We put on different hats at a certain time, I think. I think that is true. But, yeah, Lyndon is saying, Steven, stop touching the cable on the microphone.
I heard it.
I can hear it.
Oh, because I heard it click. So I was like, okay, maybe it has to go back in.
Don't touch it.
All right.
Right? We are not audio professionals, clearly. Yeah. Right? Just doing our best. But as we start talking about email mailing lists and customer acquisition costs and all this kind of stuff, I actually started hating myself. And I just wanted to go on the record to say that there is a side of creative expression where if you want people to be in the audience, the only place where there is an audience, the conversation that people are used to have is one based on consumerism. Right. So if you want people to read The Laundryman, putting it up online is actually less likely to get people to read it and actually engage than asking them for money to have it. And it's such a, I think, a horrible circuit breaker, but it's just necessary in the culture that we live in, where if people are going to read The Laundryman, if you said, here, read The Laundryman, it's free, a lot less people would want to read it than if you say you can't have it unless you pay for it.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true.
How do you guys feel about going on a crowdfunding platform and saying, give me money. My idea is good, I promise.
I'm totally fine with it. This is the society we live in, whether we like it or not. And there's a lot of things I don't like about, a capitalist organized economy. But this is how we consume entertainment. This is how we find things that we like.
Is that all this is to you? Entertainment?
Which?
The making of stories with words and pictures.
Well, as a reader, yeah, that is your entertainment. That's what I'm getting at as a consumer.
Yeah.
That's how we do it, is by purchasing it, like or a subscription for it or something like that. So I don't really have an issue with asking for money for it.
It's like the idea that the only real democracy alive in capitalism is voting with your dollars.
And it's isn't it kind of weird? Like, I'm just thinking about like in the past week, I've rented a movie. Right, I have access to Netflix and Amazon Prime and Disney and hundreds of films, and I'm in the lucky
just what you want,
whatever I want, right? Yeah. And I paint a lot, and so I can watch movies while I paint, and so I can binge through a season of a show, watch a series of movies. But if I pay $4 or $5 to rent a movie, I stop what I'm doing, and that movie gets my full attention.
Yeah,
isn't it funny that when you think of the movie that you want to watch, it's not on anything.
Never.
And then you rent it.
And it's everywhere.
And you watch it, and then it's on everything. Like, if you had just waited like 2 more days, it might be there. But that's true. If you isolate your money towards one thing, and it's not just something you pulled off a shelf that's been sitting there forever, you're going to sit down and read that, especially with a Kickstarter, where what we're trying to do is, when you receive that physical book, it's still fresh in your mind. So once you get it, like, you're going to be stoked to read it.
And we're invested in you guys now too, right? You go to the Kickstarter, you see the story of these two creatives who came together, they made this thing, you're like emotionally invested now in their journey to like make this thing a reality. And I get to help this thing become like an actual physical thing. It's kind of it's a magical little process. And what's the alternative, right? Like, signing with a big publisher,
it is a two-edged sword, though, because if we invest in Lyndon and we invest in Steven, and then we find out that Steven's political views don't align with ours, if we find out that Lyndon is mistreating his chosen life
partner. We're not
going to
talk about how they're flat earthers, right?
Right.
We're
and if we find out that they both believe in the hollow earth, and that is where they're going to use their Kickstarter money, right, to go on an expedition. Laundromat is actually a way for them to raise funds to go on an expedition to the hollow earth. If we told you that stuff,
you know, I might
then
back that. I want to see where that goes.
To be honest, just ask me. I'll give you money for that. You don't have to trick me.
I will buy you the shovel.
So to go back to your question about asking for money for things, Dr. Jonathan Ball recently made me read a book called Your First 1,000 Copies by Tim Grawl.
I've read it too.
One of the things
disagree with about half of it.
One of the things that is in there is he talks about if you want to stop feeling guilty asking people for money, you have to believe in what you're selling.
Yeah.
You have to believe that people should read your book.
Right.
So when I, to compare that to you, Gregory, you're an educator.
Yeah.
You don't feel guilty asking for money to teach people stuff.
Yes, but let's frame that. I ask for money from the people who can afford it, not the people who are being taught. So the organization that wants me to teach the end user, as long as it's free to the end user, I'm more likely to agree, even to a lesser price, to be asked to come and speak or teach, as long as I know that the barrier of instruction is zero and interest is the only key to come in, right? If, however, it's always you have to pay to get the knowledge, that's inherently classist and I hate it.
Okay, so maybe not the best comparison.
Right.
I retract my statement.
Right. But when a publisher, and this is maybe a nice, I didn't sign the NDA yet, but maybe I'll still keep it. If somebody who has means reaches out and asks me to do something, there is a fixed price associated with it, and I will demand that price. And if I'm paid that price, if I'm given the king's shilling, I will kill for the king, I suppose. Right?
Now so you tell them the king's story, not your own.
Exactly. And so that's the danger there. So you guys went to Kickstarter crowdfunding to tell your own story.
Yeah, to fully answer the question, I'm okay asking for money for this work because I believe in the work.
Yeah. And I've read Laundromat. It's great. You guys should totally, like, all associations aside, if I had picked up a copy of The Laundromat because I saw that some famous comics book person told me that I should read it, I would not have been disappointed in the promise of entertainment versus the dollar value associated to the comic. Like, it's very entertaining. But there's stuff under it, too. This is why I was leading the question. There's a through line under Laundryman that I feel is going to be revealed. There's something more about this story than just two guys fighting monsters, I assume. And I know Lyndon well enough to know if this look means yes, right?
No, it's just, this is just the one book. When it ends, that's it. There's no more.
Do you want to talk about it? Is there something further in the Laundryman universe if this goes well?
So going back to the perk of the Canadian art scene being grant funding, available grant funding, Stephen and I have received funds from the Canada Council of the Arts to do books 2 and 3, which is issues 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. So we're already working on book 2.
Great.
At the time, the script is almost finished. Stephen's in early art stages. And our hope is that this campaign is successful enough that we can come back in a year and say, hey, you liked this first book. Please look at the second book.
But the book in this campaign is a complete
standalone story.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think I always try
Monster of the Week is a great pitch that they gave it. It's not just that it sounds snappy. Mm-hmm. There's a satisfying conclusion. There's a hint of a larger, more terrible thing. But you know, if there was the only one you ever read of The Laundryman, you'd be like, I know what Laundryman is, and it was good.
Yeah, the way we structured this series is that each of the quote-unquote cases of The Laundryman occurs over a 3-issue arc, or about 80 pages.
Can we call it a wash cycle?
Sure. Yeah. Each wash cycle of The Laundryman occurs in 3 issues.
That's the second laundry pun today on a podcast.
I'm trying hard. Yeah. Right?
And that's our aim, is that each book is going to work as a standalone case so that people can jump on whenever they want and they can understand each sort of standalone volume. But taken together, you get a long, cohesive story about these two guys that work together and the difficulties of the relationship and the challenges they go through and you know, how they develop as partners in their business.
You killed Ted, you medieval dickweed!
You know, Kickstarter is the washer, right? The drier stage is like what comes after. It's fulfillment. It's making sure it's what people want. They want to get that warm sweater out of the dryer. They want, well, careful, it's not a mixed blend of knit and cotton, right?
Yeah, but you got to make sure once you get the sweater out of the dryer, before you put in another load, you got to look back and make sure you take the lint out of the lint tray.
Right.
Because you all know what I mean, right?
What I'm saying is, what's the lint tray in the Kickstarter? What's the thing that a lot of people are going to forget to do, and then all that stuff messes up the next load?
Oh, I think I lost the metaphor.
I can't answer that question because we haven't made it far enough in the Kickstarter to know that yet.
Okay, well,
in my mind, I feel like we've done the things that we need to do. Like, we've checked the shipping costs. We've gone on to the interviews. We've started getting pull quotes. By the way, Scott Snyder said he loves our book. Just putting that out there to anyone who listens. I don't know what we've forgotten because this is day one.
Yeah. The cycle is still spinning.
The cycle is still spinning.
Yeah. That's good. So we can smell the detergent.
Not even in that dryer.
They're sitting cross-legged and I'm a delicate washer watching.
And I'm a delicate.
It's all suds.
Cold water only.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to stick to this metaphor for the rest of the podcast.
Oh, no.
This is my vow.
Our big hiccup with Dragon Annie was when the packaging envelopes that I got were great for sending out one book. When you put 3 books in there, it all seemed fine. But if that package, it was kind of a big cardboard envelope type thing, like seemed really sturdy. But if it was dropped in a certain way, it basically its seam would blow. And so it could open up if it was damaged. And I think we had one or two, it was all overseas orders, stuff that went to Europe and Germany and Sweden. We had a couple envelopes show up completely empty.
Like, we got the envelope. Yeah. Here's a picture of the empty envelope.
With a blown seam. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, lucky for our backers, we will be hand delivering every copy of Laundryman
around the world.
By balloon.
Yeah, by balloon. Yes, correct. Yeah.
Right, the same balloon you'll take to the Hollow Earth.
100%. If you want to come, we're going. Yeah.
We're selling tickets now, actually.
And yeah, I think in a lot of Kickstarters, shipping is like kind of the scary haunted woods of the process.
It still haunts my mind.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong.
It's pen in the pocket of the shirt in the tumble cycle.
It's the pen, yeah. Okay.
Right? Leaking slow. You don't even know that it's bad until it's too late.
Well, that's what it is, right? Is you feel like you've done the prep, you've checked the shipping costs, but you can't count on those shipping costs to be the same in six weeks when it is that you go to mail something. You can't count on all the variables that go into the different, you know, combination of things that people can order. You can really just try and get a general sense of what shipping costs are going to be up front and then pray.
And build in that buffer for Murphy's Law, because something is going to happen. And if you are just going into this expecting something is going to happen.
I remember something.
And if you're not careful, you might leave your wallet like in the washer. And
yes.
And then
the uncashed check turns into little bits.
Little bits.
Gone.
Yeah, a little wad in your pocket.
In fact, remember when you accidentally left an ad running?
I was born in the 90s. I don't use checks.
Yes.
So here's something, dear listener. Be careful. If you are using any of the social media platforms, ad-based, targeted services, they're purposely not that user-friendly so that it's easy to overlook certain toggles. And one of those toggles that is that you can leave it running.
Oh.
And it'll just charge you again and do
like
it again.
Like an Instagram ad?
And then do it again and then charge you again. And if you're not careful, then you can be a few weeks later and be like, wow, this bill for this ad is like enormous.
Why did I spend $1,300 with Meta?
Yeah, 2 months.
It was 2 months. I left a Google ad on for Dragon Nanny for the book was launched in October. And in December, I'm looking at credit card bills going, what is this that just keeps coming up and up and up? And it's something very nondescript, right? It was like, you paid Google money. It's like, what does that mean? Where is this going?
How many movies did I rent?
Right, yeah. I left an ad running, and it was like on a whim. I was just going through different ways to market it. It's like, okay, I can have Google do ads for me and point to the Kickstarter, point to the YouTube page, and I'll put like a couple bucks there, and then
You set this little widget. For those of you who've never done it before, it shows like a certain number of dollars a day that you're willing to. And it'll show you how many people it may or may not reach.
Amount.
Yeah, but it'll just keep dripping. And if you don't turn it off, it just drip, drip, drip every day. And if your then ad takes off, there's a premium charge for each person that clicks the link, right?
So there's a premium charge for receiving the product that you're purchasing, which is the advertisement being successful.
Correct.
Oh my God.
Yeah. We'll show it to everyone, and if they click it, we're going to charge you a little bit more.
Sir, I know you bought those eggs, but on the way out the door, you'll have to flip a $5 to the security guard.
Exactly. Right? So just these are things that I think can catch people off guard if they're not sure.
Wow.
Yeah. And when your palette arrives, you guys are not printing like, well, it gets depends on how
we're going to find out. Yeah.
How the Kickstarter goes.
Which is the other great thing, because usually our number one piece of advice when printing a book is don't print a ton until you know how to sell them, how many you're going to need. And what's great about this is you're going to have an exact idea of how many books you're going to need at the end of this campaign. And then you can kind of do the math and figure out how many more you want on top of that to take around to shows.
We already know how to sell any excess that we want to pick up. So.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and for the dear listener, so that they understand, the campaign is happening at laundryman.ca. If it funds its current funding goal, that is going to print us roughly 300 copies of a book in black and white. And we have a stretch goal that is 4 times as large as what our initial ask is. And if we can reach that stretch goal, it will fund a 1,000 book print run with color interiors, not black and white. And the reasoning behind that is, one, printing is very expensive. But two, there wasn't a cost-effective way to print a book in color until you reach a certain number of copies. I think when we were looking at the cost of printing this book in color, if we only wanted to print 200 or 300 copies, we were looking at, you know, $13 or $14 a book.
Yeah.
And it wasn't
ridiculous.
And it wasn't until we reached the 1,000 book mark that price per unit goes down to like $6 a book, which is a lot more palatable.
International listeners, we're speaking in Canadian dollars, of course. So if you're operating in the pound system or the US dollar, you may, that might sound crazy to you, but our dollar is a little different.
So that's the logic behind that decision. But as Justin said, if we only scrape by our funding goal, well, we're only going to have 300 books. But because of the price, or because of the ask for the Kickstarter, that probably means we're only looking at maybe 50 copies of the book going to backers.
Right.
And the rest become our stock.
And there's a flip in comic book spaces that the speculator market, which is the people who say, oh, this book may have another life, it may have a new printing, it may have something else. The first low-run print of something now, we're seeing the speculator market hungry to find a book that there's only 300 of, hungry to find a book there's only 50 of or 1,000 of.
The first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there was 300, right?
Yeah, it was like a really low print of that original, yeah.
That and their uncle
so,
paid for or something.
Of course, this becomes a piece of history if it were to take off. And so speculators, people, and for good or ill, comic book land has been a place that attracts speculators and is rife with them. And so that can, in a fiduciary way, help the books that you have.
Bill.
What?
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
Putting together a Kickstarter, question that comes up a lot and something that when I'm building them, I'm constantly playing around with is, besides the book itself, which is like the main meat and potatoes of the Kickstarter, what are the other things that you guys are offering? What are the other tiers and how did you decide? What was left on the, what I'm wanting to hear about is what was left on the cutting room floor of your tiers?
And how many times have you answered this question?
We actually haven't answered this one yet. Oh, I mean, we've answered, what else are you offering?
Right.
But not what did you decide against offering?
Yeah.
And then I want to hear
why
your answer for
not?
She-Wolf.
Yeah, okay.
So,
my answer is great.
Well, the second answer is a lot harder, is what did you decide against? The first one was easy, which is what did you include? And the answer to that is basically whatever I could ship that fits within the dimensions of the book.
Great decision.
Well, yeah, I'll take that straight from you. I'll give you credit for that. So we're offering books, first off, which is The Laundryman. We're offering all of the books that Steven and I have worked on previously, which is Infinite Universe, What Will Not Last, Dead Work, and When I Get Home. All of those are available. We do have two pieces of original art that are available. Those are a lot harder to come by. There's only two of
them.
Wait,
there's original art on your...
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen the Early Bird print on the Kickstarter?
Yeah. You have the original art for that.
Yeah, that's an ink drawing that I did like 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah, or no, yeah, 3 or 4 years ago.
How much are you asking for that?
Is it a three? Six,
do you want to get it?
That's a $600.
I feel like maybe that's a studio purchase.
That's
it here first. We're gonna scoop you.
Yeah, that's a $600 tier. So we have one with that, and so it gets you all the books and the new book, and then there's one with the original art for Zach Schuster's print that he contributed, same type of tier, just with Zach's art instead.
Oh,
so yeah,
that's heavy.
Yeah,
now we're gonna pit two artists I really like against one another with my wallet.
Well, and obviously the cool thing about the one for Steven's art, sorry Zach, Steven doesn't do original art. He's a digital artist.
Right.
So the fact that we have a piece of original art related to The Laundryman is really cool.
And it is increasingly rare that there is just people slinging ink in comics. And so what you've seen, again, in that aftermarket, and for dear listeners who aren't sure about it, so if I did, let's say it was the 70s and I worked for Marvel Comics and I was doing Spider-Man, I would lay my inks and my pencils down on artboards. They would go to Marvel Studios. They'd get scanned. And if you had a proper, reputable editor, you'd get your art back, right? And now that art is yours. You made the art for that Spider-Man page. That original art is yours. The reproduction belongs to the publisher. They're going to print those comics forever. But you now have this piece of original art for each page. And at conventions, in other places, someone might really want the page, for example, where Gwen Stacy is killed, mm-hmm. right? That becomes exceptionally valuable in the commodification of nostalgia.
It's the moments that you want to buy. Yeah.
And so
first appearance of,
we're seeing prices for original art skyrocketing because they're actually rarer as a commodity because less and less people are working in traditional mediums to make comics. The typical ask for those pages has gone through the roof.
And I, you know, to be honest, I wasn't sure when I saw that we had these two pages of original art what a fair price for them was.
Right.
And I still don't have the answer for that.
Yeah.
But when I looked at the price of those tiers, which we have listed at $600 Canadian, so it's significantly less if you're on a different currency, probably, depending on the currency.
And it will be delivered to you by Stephen and Lyndon in a balloon.
In a balloon.
100%. On a shortcut through the... Well, and it's shorter to reach the rest of the Earth through the Hollow Earth.
Yeah. Thank God for the Hollow Earth.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think as the crow flies is fast, try as the Hollow Earth lets you go through it.
But, yeah, so to go back to the original art, we had these two pieces of original art, and they're listed on our campaign as, like, mega tiers, because you want to have some high-ticket items.
Mega tier.
We chose the price because we don't necessarily want to sell them, but we will sell them for a price.
We don't want to sell them.
Yeah. So those are our biggest tiers. We do have some smaller but large tiers. Steven is doing 5 commission slots of whatever non-explicit, non-illegal, appropriate artwork someone may want. And I'm doing 5 slots of comic lettering, because as a letterer with some professional credits, it's the one thing that people generally need to fix their comics before they send them somewhere.
That one scares me. Both those scare me.
Yeah, working with... Yeah. We've both had very interesting... Which we'll save for another episode. Maybe we'll do a whole episode on commission horror stories.
Yeah.
But it can be a dangerous... Let's perhaps present to these two young creators how you typify the cautionary tale. What is the thing you
want to warn them? No explicit, like, illegal content.
There's still a spectrum out there of all kinds of things that...
And whose country does that fall under?
Okay.
Right?
So
by my definition.
Yeah. No, it's... And it'll probably turn out fine. There's just that chance that you might have to deal with somebody who's not that great to do. Yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be fine, guys.
And here I thought when you said that I'm scared of those, like you were tempted by them. But no, it's more like don't do them. Yeah, okay.
An open-ended, like you can hide. You.
We'll do work for you.
I'm doing work for you.
There's a reason why so many traditional comic artists have a art dealer manage their commission list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because. Is a filter.
I think it's not as much like the work. It's usually the training of how this works that you have to go through with the person, like with certain clients, right? Yeah. Like
you'll send them the finished one and they'll say, great. Can he be blue and have his arms above his head?
And I'll say, no, it's done.
But I paid you. You're
mine. Oh, yeah, you did.
You're
already.
Mine now.
Yeah.
You're mine now. And then they'll go on your social media and they'll comment on every
Okay, we're getting off topic though. What tiers didn't make the list?
And they're always watching. Did we have tiers?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at... They're pretty streamlined, but I looked at, you know, I looked at other campaigns, and some people do, like, buttons, and some people do shirts, and we all know that shirts are really expensive, and you need to order 1,000 of them, and so it's not worth the cost of doing, and buttons don't necessarily fit in the packaging, and they can ruin things if you squish them against something. So, tiers like that, we kind of said no to, but there was never anything crazy or anything that we were considering. I think we actually sort of struggled to come up with enough tiers. It wasn't like we were cutting stuff down. We were trying to add stuff.
Okay.
Because of the limits you had imposed on yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen several Kickstarters, especially nowadays with like how prevalent like books and comics have become on Kickstarter. Like it seems nowadays you can have a campaign based on the product, like the book itself. Like even Dead Work didn't have a bunch of swag that came with it. It was you got the book and you could add the other books to it. And I don't know about Dragon Nanny. I can't remember all the tiers for Dragon Nanny.
Dragon Nanny had some, it was mostly the book and prints. There was some canvases and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, most of the decisions came down to shipping. Like you guys said, like You're shipping a book. As soon as you add like a t-shirt to that, now you've tripled the size of the box, maybe 5 times the size of the box. And now that's a whole other shipping cost you now need to calculate. And now if you want to add one other thing, it's a different size box. It's a different weight. It all came down to the shipping, all our decisions on what tiers to offer and how to price them.
San Diego High School Football Room!
One thing I did consider. So I guess I lied to you. I said we had nothing crazy. One of the things I did want to consider at one point was, as I said, we've already received a page rate to work on book two. So I wanted, I briefly considered making a like super far off stretch goal of the campaign being, if we make it to X number, you get book two also. We need to finish it first, but then you get book two.
It's hard to plan that far ahead.
It really is. Yeah. And yeah, you never know when it's going to be finished. And that was the other constraint we dealt with was we didn't do like, if we reach X amount, we're going to do extra page. We're going to make extra pages.
Sure.
Because the book is done. I want to send it to the, we want to send it to the printer. We want to send it to people. We want to sell it. We don't want to have to sit on it for another month because we're working on more art. So one of our stretch goals that we included is add 6 pages of a bonus comic that teases book two, but we've already made that comic.
Right.
We're just adding it to the file.
Content created.
What about something personalized in Laundryman? Did you guys, well, the book was done, so it's not usually, that wasn't an option, but sometimes you see name a character. You get to name a street or a character in the book. Did you guys talk about anything like that?
I don't think that really crossed our minds. Nope. Coming back to the fact that we've already done the book, so
yeah.
I have seen that stuff before, and I think that's pretty cool. And there's probably a certain
added some fabric softener, but you didn't.
Could have added nice those beads.
Yeah, you know, the beads, the smelly beads.
Yeah. Yeah, could have added the smelly beads to the Kickstarter.
I don't think that's what they're called.
That's the scientific name for them.
Yeah.
Smelly laundry beads.
Yeah. New from the Laundryman.
Yeah, but it just hadn't thought about that just because it really came down to the fact that this Kickstarter was to create a physical copy of a book we had already created.
Right.
And so all of our thinking was around that. And all this talking is kind of thinking, oh man, maybe we missed out on thinking of a couple things, but
yeah. So you guys are having fun with this. Things are going well. You're at 30-something% already. Have you started talking about what to do different next time yet, or is it too early? It's still day one. It's hard to
too early.
Yeah, a little early, but I think we will probably end up having several conversations because if provided the success of this one, we plan to do more of this. So we'll probably debrief at the end and take notes.
We should do that on air to have
post-mortem
recorded. Would probably be really great because by the time you're ready for that second one, you're going to forget everything.
Oh yeah,
about what
idea.
You talked about.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask a question that maybe we should have asked right off the jump, which is, and the last question of the episode, I think, why not go the traditional publishing route? Why not lean heavy into pitching? Why not find an agent? Why not reach out to mid-tier or larger publishers to get this made? Why do it yourselves?
I have a quick line, and then when we started making Laundryman, like it really felt like the sole intention that we wanted with this book was to keep it 100% ours for as long as possible. So we have almost only ever considered self-publishing routes. So Lyndon will have more.
We would need, it would need to be worth it to give up the rights to the book. So, you know, we did pitch it to Image. We got a very nice rejection letter from Eric Stevenson from Image saying,
stop showing up outside my house in your air balloon. I'm tired of this harassment.
How are you getting here so quickly? Is the earth hollow or something?
Now, we do have other books that are tied up in publishers right now. We have sold books to publishers, and those publishers are doing whatever it is they're doing with those books.
But it's always slow.
That choice of language, tied up with publishers.
Oh, yeah. Tied up, coming slow, coming soon, but soon means 2025.
2 to 5 years.
Yeah. So what you're saying is this gives you the ability to be nimble and pivot and just have something that's yours and try it your way and kind of...
Not only is it something that's ours, we think it's the best thing that's ours, and so we wanted to hold on to it.
Right.
We're more than happy to have an idea that we, you know, that we really like and we want to make, and give it to a publisher and see what they can do with it. But with this idea, it was something that sort of struck a chord in us, and we thought, this is worth holding on to until there's a good reason not to hold on to it anymore.
So the parent metaphor is you've got three kids, and one of them you really love, and the other two you'd put up for adoption.
Exactly.
You got
exactly.
It. Okay. That's pretty good.
Yeah, like any good parent.
Like any good parent. No, you evil monsters. So
what
then,
if that's what's best for the kid.
What if so? It's you two as parents, maybe, right? The lost sock in our analogy here.
Jesus.
The lost sock is the piece of the project that always disappears when it goes through that laundry cycle with a publisher. There's always some element that's gone from the original idea by the time it goes through the cycle when you go with the publisher. They ask you to change either a certain amount of copy because of a sensitivity reader, usually a good idea. They might ask you to change something because of how it's going to be marketed in a certain season, sometimes a good idea. And other times they simply say, can we cut this entire character because then it'll be shorter pages and we can meet our deadline faster and then it becomes a product sooner. Never a good idea,
yeah.
Right? But you always lose something when you're working with a bigger team that has...
A good way to put it is... Going with a publisher,
if it's not a laundry analogy, it's not a good way to put it.
And that's where I'm going.
Okay.
Going with a big publisher is like going to a laundromat. You can only use the softener and detergent that they have there. You have to use your machines. But if you're doing it at home, in the comfort of your own warm, toasty home, and you can pick out whatever fabric softener, whatever detergent.
That's right.
Whatever.
You can hang it on the line for as long as you want for
exactly.
It to dry in the
yeah.
sun. And the wind.
Yeah, because with the first part, it's like if no matter what you do with that store machine, with that store fabric softener, that store soap, one of those t-shirts is going to come out a little tighter than it went in.
Right. It's not going to fit the way you wanted it to.
Exactly.
It comes folded, comes smelling nice. Everything's great.
It's still a good shirt.
Yeah.
Somebody might straight up steal your machine and your book will come out 2 years later than you thought it was.
Speaking of that, and to go back to the original question,
publishing breaks down, as we have seen. That's true. Yeah.
Hypothetically, Stephen and I are working, we're working on two books at the same time. One is indie published.
Yeah.
One is with a publisher. I think both of them are really good. I can put out one now, indie, and other people will see my book. Whereas the other book is not going to come out for 2 years, and every passing day,
that cycle of
every passing day that other people do not get to see my book, theoretically how good that book is a day lost where I could be getting work or I could be finding more work.
Right. So this proves it's a proof of concept for you as creatives.
Yes.
Right? We are working creatives. We do work. Some is available for publishers. Some is available for us. We work in the gig economy, but we also work in the rigged economy.
Well, maybe I'm just sick of people not seeing how good Steven is as an artist. They're not going to see that if his book doesn't come out for 2 more years.
That's true.
They get to see this one now.
Yeah. So if you want to see how good Steven is as an artist, you should probably back The Laundryman. If you want to make Lyndon upset, you should not back The Laundryman. So depending on which of these two guests you like the best.
Oh, no.
Is what you should choose. It's like a choose your own adventure. Although we have to be careful. The word choose your own adventure can get you in a lot of litigation these days. So let's skip that part. This has been Super Pulp Science, where we have talked about how genre gets made. I'm Gregory Kmicek, encouraging you to join the fight and make comics.